It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Rachel Campos Duffy.
I'm David Asman, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, April 22nd, 2024. I'm Mike Emanuel. House lawmakers passed foreign aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, even though a small number of conservatives were threatening to remove Speaker Mike Johnson from office.
There's only 56 people in the history of America that have ever had that job, and everybody else that wants to judge it has never been in it.
We speak with former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy.
And Lisa Brady. Scientists are trying to pinpoint why so many younger adults are getting cancer, but some possible answers might not lead to action.
At the end of the day, you have big pharma, you have big tech, and you have big food who are all very invested in a lot of these consumer products that are probably causing a lot of this. And I think from a political standpoint, it's going to be very hard for us to get away from some of it.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
A rare busy weekend in the House of Representatives as bipartisan lawmakers overwhelmingly passed a $95 billion foreign aid package, including resources for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Part of the pitch from House Speaker Mike Johnson, noting it is a dangerous world.
It's a dangerous time. Three of our primary adversaries, Russia and Iran and China, are working together, and they're being aggressors around the globe.
Georgia Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is angry and threatening to remove the speaker.
He has completely betrayed the Republican Party. He has completely betrayed Republican voters all over the country. And he is absolutely working for the Democrats, passing the Biden administration's agenda.
Next up for the aid package is the Senate. But first, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham celebrated its approval.
This would not have passed without Donald Trump. I want to thank the House Speaker and Akeem Jeffries working together in a bipartisan fashion to give weapons to Ukraine to fight a fight that matters to us. And President Trump has created a loan component to this package that gives us leverage down the road.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky expressed his appreciation for this critical step.
Thanks to each and everyone who supported our package. This is a solution to protect lives.
It wasn't easy passing the huge foreign package, but with some bipartisan cooperation, it was accomplished.
Look, this is something that need to get done, but it should have been done in a different manner.
Former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
What I was going to do, I was concerned that Israel took too long. Mm-hmm. You're 6 months past October 7th. You sent a wrong message to the world on our support. Shouldn't have had to pay for it. Should have been done right away. What you should have done, too, is take the Ukraine money and sit down and negotiate directly with the president. Don't have the Senate Republicans do it. They're in the minority. And don't sit down with the four leaders because they're never going to agree with something. Because this is where I want to show you the example of the difference. When we had the debt ceiling issue, if I would have had the four leaders negotiate it, would we have cut $2 trillion? Would we have gotten welfare reform? Would we have gotten NEPA reform you haven't had in 40 years? Would they have taken back $20 billion from the IRS auditors? Mm-hmm. No. But use the power of the majority of the speaker. Be confident enough, you sit down with the president and say, look, I'm not going to do anything until we get this. So then if you had that Ukraine bill, the Taiwan, Israel already gone, and you had the majority of HR 2, you would have had the majority of Republicans voting for it. That is using the power of the majority. Now, sitting around and waiting, then the problem becomes too big and Ukraine's walking in the other direction. Like, if this had been done in October, Russia wouldn't have gained those areas they had, right? So, I mean, not making a decision is making a decision and plays it out too long, and then now we've got turmoil on all sides. There's people who wanted to support Ukraine but didn't like the idea that here's the Senate writing it, the House doesn't have input. We have a lot of people in there that have fought in war, that understand what it takes to win, and they could have put their expertise. What's the plan for victory? It's not a plan to just keep funding Ukraine. It's a plan to be victorious, right? And so you want to use that, especially with you're in the majority. So my take is It's just a different style. Mm-hmm. I fully engage. I mean, if you're going to be speaker, boom, go right at it. And it's a different place, I mean, from that position. And you want to put a position where Democrats are going to have to vote for the bill, mm-hmm. but they're voting for your bill.
Lawmakers over the weekend also passed a bill that could potentially ban TikTok in this country unless it is sold. What do you make of that in terms of the national security concerns as it relates to TikTok being Chinese-owned?
You know, I created the Select Committee on China, which the whole idea of where that came from, I was walking the grave sites at Normandy. At the 75th anniversary, I was actually walking them with then Speaker Pelosi. And I thought as a policymaker, what would the policymakers back in that day, what could they have done that that day never would have happened? And, you know, I don't know if you ever read Graham Allison's book, Destined for War, written mm-hmm. in 2017. He brings up, what's the Greek fellow? Thucydides' trap, right? 16 times in world history as the number two fought the number one. Only four times they didn't go to war. And so what you want to look at is it wasn't the things that the policymakers could have done a week before D-Day, but what could they have done a decade before? And I've watched that we become too dependent upon China, right? So it's not about preparing for war. It's about making sure you don't have war. And the Select Committee on China that we put together, Pelosi wouldn't do it, but we were able to do it when we became the majority, has been very productive. Like when I met with the president of Taiwan, the first thing, I want to make sure I met with her at Reagan Library. You mm-hmm. want to know why? The symbolism of America defeating communism, right? But I was able to get the Democrats, and credit to them, that they would come and meet with us. So there was one voice. You're much stronger in that way. Mm-hmm. And when you look at TikTok, TikTok is used different in America than it is in China. Children aren't able to be on it for so long. Who's getting the data? And so what you really want to do is, how do you protect that data? But it also brings up another question. You know, anything on the internet itself, if it's free, you're the product.
Right.
So what about these other companies protecting that data? I mean, President Trump brings a very good issue up there. The difference in this bill that they just passed, though, too, prolongs it out to a year to actually change course on the ownership and others. And so I think in issues like this, it would have been better to actually both committees have that further debate. I like ideas all in it, but they put it in with this measure at the same time. So I think it sends a clear message.
The passage of the supplemental has raised questions about Speaker Johnson's leadership. You've got some right-wing members calling for his head. What do you make of this argument now when it's election season, and shouldn't the focus be on Republicans winning a larger majority in November?
Well, I don't think it would shock you that I don't agree with a motion to vacate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, what I think is happening is just a prolong of what transpired when the eight led by Gates partnered with all the Democrats to determine who the Speaker of the House was. Mm-hmm. And if you watch, since then, the majority has been broken. I mean, what have they passed since then? Think about how strong we started with H.R. 2, our border security bill, H.R. 1, energy independence, parents' bill of rights, stopping D.C. from decriminalizing all those different bills when people didn't think we'd do it, ending the pandemic, cutting the biggest cut in American history, more than $2 trillion. We did that with a very small majority, working together, uniting. But when these eight got together, led by Gates and partnered with all the Democrats, it went against all the rules of the Republican House, and there was no consequences for them, right? I mean, you've got Byron Donaldson, a leader in the conservatives, saying what Gates did was wrong, and now it's created Lord of the Flies. Now, this latest motion to vacate is much different than the Gates motion to vacate. It's not privileged, so it's not put up for a vote. It's more like a debate, mm-hmm. what's happening. And look, being Speaker is a very difficult job. I'm mm-hmm. never going to judge on that. I know it's tough, and Mike being put in, because you had a number of other people who had more experience who couldn't get to 218.
Right.
So I don't think it'll ever come to fruition for this point. Who's going to do the job? Who can get to 218? And you're going to do this before an election? Now, after the election, you're going to have a whole different debate. And the part that really hurts here now is, remember, I was leader for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And in those 5 years, the Democrats were in the majority, four of them. We had to win the majority back. Now they're sitting in a majority. And for those that hadn't helped win the majority, the Gates and the others, we won it by winning in California and New York. Mm-hmm. We won in Arizona. Every place Republicans were losing, we were winning, right? And it's easier this cycle to win seats for Republicans in the House than it was the last two cycles. And now they're giving the Democrats the advantage. I mean, if you just take the current numbers financially, mm-hmm. when I was leader, our super PAC had more money than the Democrat super PAC plus the DCCC. Now that's not the case. They have more. Our candidates, prior to those assignments, and candidates' money is very important, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats love it. That's why they're jumping in. The Democrats use those eight to dismantle what we were doing on the floor. Because
yep.
what have we passed since then? What are we doing? We're fighting among ourselves. So I think everybody needs to get in the room. I know everybody on all sides. Look, doing the job is difficult. People have different philosophical beliefs. But the one thing you have to understand, it is much better that they're in the majority, that they're holding these gavels. And so, but you've got to govern. Otherwise, the public will not reward you with that.
To that point, should they be worried that they're sending a message to voters that Republicans cannot govern when it comes to the House of Representatives?
Well it's really – but it's very difficult. And if you look at who's doing that, right? So after I left, you had Gates and the others continue on a continuing resolution. They ended up spending $50 billion more. They locked in Pelosi's policies, and they tried to say they had a conservative win. I would actually educate the American public because these people aren't conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real challenge. I mean, Gates has actually ended up having the country spend more money, lock in Pelosi's policies, but he just tries to go do something else to protect his own personal shortcomings of an ethics complaint. And I think the rest of the conference ought to realize that and realize that the border is important. Go negotiate it. Spending is important. Continue down the path of that $2 trillion in cut and go for more. And that's governing. Use that majority to do it.
You've been out of the pressure cooker for a bit. You've had a chance to decompress. Is there anything you would have done differently as Speaker of the House? And any advice for Mike Johnson in this critical stage?
Look, I look in life. Look, there's a lot of things maybe I've come up short in or didn't do best. But I don't think I'd change anything because it's made me who I am. I learn more from my stumbles than the others. I'm proud of everything I did. Would I have done different? Would I have gone in and stopped the Ethics Committee from looking at Gates? I'd still be Speaker, but I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't look at my grandchildren and said, oh, I did the right decision because I got to stay Speaker. No, I'm proud of making the right decision, even though it could cost me my own job. I'm proud that I decided to pay the troops sitting in the Mediterranean right before Israel was going to be attacked, because what would the world look like, right? I'm proud of walking through, standing up and getting the biggest cuts in history. I'm proud that we put through a border security bill, an energy bill, a parents' bill of rights. That's a real struggle. I'm proud of helping win a majority twice. I'm proud of who we elected. When you look at the Republican Party today, prior to coming in, we've had more women, we have more minorities in the history of the party. So that means the party's opening up in bigger places. I loved every day of it, every challenge of it, right? And I don't have to be elected to still be a part of it. That's the uniqueness of America, of the people, by the people, for the people. You know, I love to run the mall and go to the Gettysburg Address and Lincoln and read it every time. You know, 67 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated the proposition that we are all equal. There is no other nation in the world that's conceived in liberty and dedicated that everybody's equal. He goes on to say, but if we fail, government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from earth. Mm-hmm. Think about when he's saying this. A country divided, not knowing whether we should sustain ourselves, but he knew the idea was more powerful than the rifle, that the idea of America was more powerful than anything else. But you're going to be challenged at that at times. And I think some of the most interesting things, look, I don't think my history's over.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the country is not, and I'm going to do everything in my part to help people that are conservative, that want to govern, that want to participate in the ideas that are going to move America forward. And I'm going to continue to do that.
Do you give Johnson credit for staring down the threat?
Oh, yes. You know, that nobody, there's only 56 people in the history of America that have ever had that job. And everybody else that wants to judge it has never been in it. See, you know, it took Johnson a lot because he'd never supported Ukraine.
Mm.
I mean, when I was Speaker, he voted against $300 million for it. And so he sits there in the Gang of Eight getting more, knowing this challenge. But look, I think you should govern fearlessly, and you can't worry about the motion to vacate. You can't worry about, am I going to be Speaker the other day? You want to know, did I do the job right? And so from that standpoint, but if he cares about the border, don't tell the president to do it by executive order. Go on the White House and literally write the bill and bring it to the floor. That's the way you govern.
Former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, great to see you, sir. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
It made headlines around the world when Britain's Princess Kate recently confirmed a cancer diagnosis.
This, of course, came as a huge shock. And William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family.
The 42-year-old Princess of Wales had successful abdominal surgery in January, announcing in March that testing later revealed cancer had been present and that she was undergoing preventative chemotherapy.
For everyone facing this disease, in whatever form, please do not lose faith or hope. You are not alone.
While the type of cancer was not disclosed, the princess is part of a concerning trend that has scientists searching for answers, a surge in cancer cases among younger adults. In general, cancer risk increases with age, but an annual report from the American Cancer Society finds people under age 50 were the only age group with an increase in overall cancer incidence from 1995 to 2020, compared to age groups 50 to 64 or 65 and older. Of all cancer deaths in people under age 50, colorectal is now the number one cause for men, number two for women in the U.S. Globally, the numbers are jarring. The British Medical Journal has reported a nearly 80% increase in the early onset of 29 types of cancer between 1990 and 2019 worldwide. Too much of a jump to be explained away by improvements in diagnosing cancer or a known risk factor, such as obesity.
We're seeing a rise in breast cancers, lung cancers, colon cancers, and other cancers which, you know, they're quite common, but they've always been quite common in older people.
Dr. Nicole Sapphire is a board-certified radiologist and Fox News contributor, also author of the new book, Love Mom.
And so specifically what we're starting to see the rise in some of these cancers in younger adults. And so why is that? Well, you know, less than a third of all cancers are due to some genetic mutations. So even breast cancers, some people think, oh, well, I don't have the BRCA gene, so I'm not at high risk for breast cancer. Well, that's not true, because the majority of people who get breast cancer don't have a genetic mutation. But what has changed? What has changed over the decades? And it really has to do a lot of our environmental exposures in the forms of the food that we eat, the things that we drink, the things that are placed on our body, the pollution, kind of multifactorial. But really, if we look at the diet in America specifically is full of processed food. We have a massive big food industry. And when you compare some of our rates of cancer, specifically colon cancers and others, to other countries that have a very different diet that is more full of, you know, natural ingredients and fresh ingredients, we certainly have higher cancers compared to them.
So diet's certainly a big factor, which was already known to be a potential factor for cancer in general, right? How important is family history, though?
Family history is incredibly important, and not necessarily because of a certain genetic mutation, but if you have a family history, it doesn't have to be of the same cancer. So for breast cancer patients, if you have a family history of melanoma or pancreatic cancer, a lot of those actually are on the same genes. So people don't realize that that sort of family history will put them at a higher risk for other cancers. And so it is crucial that when someone is checking in with their primary care doctor, that they really go into that. And so when they say, you know, what is your family history? Don't think of, well, it's not breast cancer, so I don't have to tell my OBGYN, because it doesn't really pertain. It absolutely does. And so it's really important for us as physicians to have a comprehensive look at the cancer history, because then we are able to tailor screening regimens to make sure that you're kind of getting the maximum benefits of early detection.
When it comes to screening regimens, a lot of these early onset cancers, and again, that basically means under 50, right? I know the parameters vary depending on the type of cancer for determining what is actually defined as early onset. But if we're talking about things under 50, if it's under 45, then you maybe wouldn't have started colonoscopies yet. Or if it's under 40, wouldn't have started mammograms yet, right? So if you're not at the age where the screenings would have started, how much of a deterrent is, let's say, insurance coverage in all of this? If you do you have to show enough of a family history in order for earlier screenings to be covered? What role is that playing?
Well, medical insurance is certainly the Achilles heel that I deal with just about every single day. That is why it is crucial to get that family history. For many, if you have a strong family history of cancer, we actually may recommend that you start your screenings even earlier on. If you have certain risk factors, such as smoking, we may be recommending that you have screenings for lung cancer and some others. But if you are a younger person, you have to really look at the benefit versus the risk of some of these screening examinations. You know, we cannot recommend to everyone starting at the age of 20 to be getting a colonoscopy or a mammogram. It doesn't make sense from a cost perspective, but there's also some harm that can come with screening. We certainly have a lot of false positives. People undergo, you know, additional testing. That's some radiation. There's a high cost to it. They can have biopsies that result in benign results. And all of this poses a risk to the patient. So you really have to look at the risk benefit when it comes to early detection. But at the end of the day, I always say, you, the individual, you know your body better than anyone else. You are the quarterback when it comes to your healthcare. So if you notice a change in your body that is not normal for you, you have to advocate for yourself. And luckily, you do have some physicians and some other people who can help advocate the insurance company, but you need to tell someone something is wrong because, again, you know your body better than anybody else.
Sometimes there's an obvious sign, like bleeding. But if it's not so obvious, especially for a younger person, I feel like it's really easy to dismiss what could be potential symptoms of a more serious problem. What should send you to at least having a conversation with a doctor?
The overwhelming majority cancer symptoms is something very vague. Just an overall feeling of unwell, maybe a little bit of abdominal bloating, maybe a little bit of discomfort here and then. But it's not something so black and white that, oh, this is obviously wrong and I have to go to the doctor. So that is why you have such delayed diagnoses in a lot of people. And that is obviously concerning. And historically, you know, as women, we tend to get brushed off in the healthcare system a little bit. We have a lot of complaints. We have autoimmune diseases. We have gynecological issues. And we also have a lot of cancers that produce vague symptoms. And because of this, people will say, oh, well, maybe it's just fatigue. It's burnout. It's anxiety.
It's hormonal.
It's hormonal. I mean, isn't that the best? Mm-hmm. I mean, we get that a lot. And sometimes it is hormonal. But you know why? Because we have hormones going through us that actually causes drastic mood swings and physical changes in our body. Nothing should be shushed and pushed under the rug. But some symptoms that I say you absolutely just, you have to have imaging. We're still talking about, we're trying to catch something earlier before you start seeing it in the blood. So from there, you know, if it is an abdominal symptom, it is a breast symptom, if it's anything, you should ask your physician, like, what about just taking a look inside? I'm not asking for a full-blown PET scan here, but what about an ultrasound? What about a CT scan? I'd really like to see what's going on inside. And asking for that, the worst that they can say is no. And by the way, if they say no, you can ask someone else. I mean, I'm not saying that everyone should have imaging. Again, there's risk and benefits to imaging. But if you know something has changed in your body, you need to know what's going on.
I read that there's in terms of research on these early onset cancers, there's a larger study, international study, that's beginning with researchers in the U.S., U.K., other parts of Europe, I think France and Asia as well, including India, some less developed places, so that they have a sort of a broader spectrum on the ground, because it's not just in the U.S., right? These early onset cancers are actually a global phenomenon at this point. Is it really a mystery? I know that we're talking about diet as one theory, and of course, microplastics we hear a lot about now that we didn't used to hear about. But at the end of the day, right now, it's still basically a mystery why this is happening.
Well, I don't want to say it's a mystery, because we certainly have, we can point to some certain things. I mean, if you, on the very basic level, if you look at the blue zone areas throughout the world, right? Sardinia, we have one here in the United States, Loma Linda. These are people who are living much longer and healthier. And so what do you point to? Well, some of it's lifestyle, but it's also a sense of community and, you know, lower mental health issues. So it is really multifactorial what is causing this. But our environmental factors, which, again, come from more than just your diet, it is the air you're breathing, it's the creams we're putting on our body. They all have certain things in them. And sunscreen has toxins in it. It has cancer-causing toxins. I mean, imagine that. Something that we solely use to prevent cancer can actually cause cancer in high doses. And unfortunately, it takes decades for us to realize that we are consuming too high amounts for this. And of course, this is international as well. And when you as the individual have some of these cancer-causing agents in your body, that can actually cause genetic mutations that are potentially passed down. And so it is a terrible domino effect. And what we do need is international collaboration to really hone in on some specifics. But at the end of the day, you have big pharma, you have big tech, and you have big food who are all very invested in a lot of these consumer products that are probably causing a lot of this. And I think from a political standpoint, it's going to be very hard for us to get away from some of it.
Is the advice on how, and you've alluded to some of this already, but is the advice on how to help avoid getting cancer the same for everyone?
Well, listen, I mean, I am not a fitness or nutritional expert by any stretch of the imagination. I love a glass of champagne, and I do love Oreos, which is probably the most processed thing you could ever eat. But there is something to be said that you avoid smoking, drinking, you should eat, you know, when you're at the grocery store, you should really just stay on the periphery and avoid all the processed foods in the center. But one thing that I have to say to everyone is that I give a cancer diagnosis to someone just about every single day. And, you know, it's at that point that a lot of them say, well, I really want to change my lifestyle, like, so this doesn't come back. And we kind of have to hone in on, well, maybe we should change our lifestyle before it actually comes. But I will say at the end of the day, you can do everything right. You can live the healthiest life possible, and you still may get cancer or something tragic still may happen to you. So for me, it's everything in moderation. You live your life to your fullest, but make sure you're also enjoying your life. So I enjoy a glass of champagne. I know that there are negative aspects to it, but I will have one occasionally because I enjoy it, and I also want to make sure I'm enjoying my life.
Goes to show how much we still don't know about cancer in general, really. Despite this rise in early onset cases, are we getting better in general at treating and curing cancer cases?
Oh, undoubtedly. So metastatic cancer, at least some of them, and by the way, cancer, again, not one size fits all. They're very, very different. And the individual that they affect can be very different. So it's really hard to, you know, when people ask, they want certain specifics on statistics, it's like, well, it really does truly vary. There are some metastatic cancers that we're treating almost like diabetes. Like it's a chronic disease for some people. They live 10, 20, 30 years with metastatic cancer because of these amazing advances in treatment. There are still some metastatic cancers that people are dying within months from. And we're working on it, and it's going to take time. And I just hope that we get there because, you know, I just heard of someone that I know, they just got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, but I know what type it is. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, this is not your end. It's just going to be a very different path for you now.
Things, when you hear words like metastatic and stage 4, it used
very
to be
scary.
Like an automatic death sentence it used to feel like, right? And maybe now not so much. So definitely progress. Dr. Nicole Sapphire, radiologist, Fox News contributor, and author of the new book, Love, Mom. Looking forward to that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday, the judge in former President Donald Trump's civil lawsuit in New York City will hear arguments concerning his $175 million bond. The New York Attorney General argues that the company which secured the bond is not authorized to do so in the state. Also Monday, it's Earth Day. Wednesday, the Supreme Court will hear arguments about Idaho's abortion ban. The Justice Department argues the state's ban conflicts with a federal law that requires hospitals participating in Medicare to provide stabilizing treatment to emergency room patients, and that could include an abortion. On Thursday, President Trump's presidential immunity arguments will be before the Supreme Court. The case stems from federal charges the former president is facing regarding trying to overturn the 2020 election. President Trump claims criminal prosecution presents a threat to the independence of the office. Also on Thursday, the NFL draft will get underway in Detroit. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Tom Graham, Fox News.
Thank you. I'm Benjamin Hall, Fox News correspondent and New York Times best-selling author. Join me for my brand new podcast, Searching for Heroes. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review.
Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
California is home to at least 30% of the nation's homeless population, and try as they might, Democrat leaders just can't seem to find a solution. Enter L.A. Mayor Karen Bass with a new suggestion for wealthy residents to chip in a little more. Yeah, she is urging wealthy Angelenos to help fund and speed up housing purchases for the homeless. She insists that if the city can just buy up more properties for housing the homeless, this systemic crisis will be eased. There's so much I want to say about this, but I'll start here. One, California already taxes the wealthy into oblivion, and it's still not enough. Two, let's talk about the audit that showed California can't account for the $24 billion already spent on homelessness. And three, how much have taxpayers hemorrhaged taking care of illegal aliens in California? The homeless crisis will never be solved in California so long as Democrats are in charge. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at OutKick.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.